It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Kiev says Ukraine forces helpless to restore order in the east, and Iraqis cast ballots despite the threat of violence. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. Ukraine's interim president says his government is helpless to quell a growing pro-Russian separatist movement in two eastern regions and says the situation has deteriorated to the point Kiev cannot control its own troops. Alexander Turchynov's admission came Wednesday at a meeting with regional governors in Kiev. He singled out mounting difficulties in Donetsk and Luhansk regions, where he said some military units are cooperating with terrorist organizations. Turchynov said his government will instead shift its focus to maintaining control of the nearby Kharkiv and Odessa regions. Voting got underway across Iraq Wednesday morning in the country's general elections amid tight security and a ban on vehicular traffic to prevent possible attacks. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Observers from the Arab League and the European Union were present in most polling stations, along with observers from local non-governmental organizations. It was the first parliamentary election in Iraq since 2010. And the first since U.S. troops withdrew in December 2011. Despite sectarian violence and tensions between Iraq's Sunni and Shiite communities, voting took place normally in most parts of the country, except predominantly Sunni Anbar province, parts of which are under control of Sunni insurgents. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Africa for talks aimed at halting violence in South Sudan and the Central African Republic. VOA's Scott Stern, who's traveling with the secretary, says Kerry arrived late Wednesday in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. Later today, Kerry meets with the foreign ministers of Ethiopia, Uganda, and Kenya to discuss the South Sudan conflict. A senior State Department official has said the secretary will deliver tough messages for both the South Sudanese government and rebels. The United States has threatened travel and financial sanctions on those responsible for violence that has displaced more than a million people. The U.S. State Department says al-Qaeda and its affiliates continue to present a serious threat to the United States and its allies. The State Department's annual report on terrorism says losses in al-Qaeda's core leadership in Pakistan and Afghanistan have accelerated the network's decentralization. It says that it has resulted in more operationally autonomous and more aggressive affiliates, notably in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Northwest Africa, and Somalia. The report says Iran remains a major state sponsor of terrorism and continues to defy demands it prove its nuclear ambitions are peaceful. An airstrike by Syrian fighter jets hit a school in the northern city of Aleppo Wednesday, killing 18 people, many of them children. Activists, including the Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, say the airstrike hit a school in the Al-Ansari district of Aleppo. Videos posted by the activists show blood and debris and the bodies of at least 10 children on the floor. The observatory says at least 18 people died in the attack, while the Aleppo Media Center says 25 children were killed. The United Nations Children's Fund says it is outraged by the latest wave of indiscriminate attacks perpetrated against schools and other civilian targets across Syria. The White House says the execution of a death row inmate in the U.S. state of Oklahoma fell short of the humane standards required when the death penalty is carried out. White House spokesman Jay Carney says President Barack Obama believes evidence shows the death penalty does not effectively deter crime, but he says Mr. Obama believes some crimes are so heinous the death penalty is merited. He says the crimes in Clayton Lockett's case are indisputably heinous. Officials halted Lockett's execution by lethal injection Tuesday when he convulsed violently and tried to lift his head after a doctor declared him unconscious. The convicted rapist and murderer later died of an apparent heart attack. Oklahoma's governor ordered a 14-day stay of execution for an inmate who was scheduled to die just 2 hours after Lockett. For more on these stories, visit our website at voanews.com. From Washington, I'm Bill Michaels, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 1st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry continues his Africa tour today, Thursday.
The secretary opens his program Thursday here in Addis Ababa with a meeting with the foreign ministers of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda, principally on the conflict in South Sudan.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns, who is traveling with Secretary of State John Kerry. U.S. Republican Party lawmakers criticized President Obama for not doing enough to end South Sudan's conflict. The African Union is hopeful in resolving the crisis in South Sudan. And Nigerian women march to demand swift government action on the plight of more than 200 girls kidnapped by Boko Haram.
We note that efforts may be going on. But what the women have come out today to say is that we want swift effort that has results.
Yeah. Obi Ezekwesili is one of the organizers of Wednesday's Women Marching in Abuja. Using social media to bring about healing and reconciliation in Liberia, and a new U.S. terrorism report says Al-Qaeda affiliates pose a growing threat. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry continues his Africa tour today, Thursday, in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. He's expected to meet with the foreign ministers of Uganda, Ethiopia, and Kenya to discuss the crisis in South Sudan. Reporter Peter Clarty debriefs VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns, who is traveling with Secretary Kerry, about today's meetings.
The secretary opens his program Thursday here in Addis Ababa with a meeting with the foreign ministers of Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda, principally on the conflict in South Sudan. As you know, the Obama administration has in place a mechanism for imposing sanctions against those leaders in South Sudan who it believes is responsible for the outbreak of violence since the December 15th alleged coup attempt in Juba, but no one has yet been identified as the object of those sanctions. So the United States is trying to line up regional support for a similar travel ban and assets freeze. Given the realities of South Sudan, the United States trying to impose a travel ban and assets freeze absent similar economic pressure from Ethiopia, Kenya, and Uganda would be far less effective.
Is there a possibility that Secretary of State Kerry will meet officials of the African Union, since the continental body has made efforts to try to help support IGAD to resolve the crisis?
He will be meeting with the African Union officials to discuss the AMISOM operations in Somalia, efforts to restore stability in the Central African Republic, and the presence of African Union forces in the Democratic Republic of Congo, as well as the AU involvement in talks here in Addis to resolve the situation in South Sudan. Bilaterally, the secretary will be meeting with his Ethiopian counterpart, the foreign minister, as well as the Ethiopian prime minister, Haile Mariam, to discuss U.S.-Ethiopia issues. Among them, according to a senior State Department official traveling with Secretary Kerry, those will include issues of press freedoms and human rights here in Ethiopia, as well as U.S. cooperation with the Ethiopians on the fight in Somalia against al-Shabaab militants and what the Ethiopians are doing to support negotiations on South Sudan.
How does he end his day, and what's next after today's series of meetings?
The end of the secretary's day here in Ethiopia on Thursday will include a closed meeting with African security experts, largely to discuss the situation in Somalia, the situation in South Sudan, some concerns about Congo, and issues of piracy.
That's VOA State Department correspondent Scott Stearns, who is traveling with Secretary of State John Kerry on his Africa tour. He spoke with reporter Peter Clarty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. U.S. Republican Party lawmakers are criticizing President Barack Obama for not doing enough to end the South Sudan crisis, which they say is eerily reminiscent of what happened in Rwanda 20 years ago. Congressman Frank Wolf is calling on Mr. Obama to send former Presidents George W. Bush and Bill Clinton to South Sudan to end the violence and help negotiate a lasting peace. Carol Van Dam has more for VOA from Washington.
At a sparsely attended news conference on Capitol Hill, Virginia Congressman Frank Wolf relayed reports of civilians, including women and children, indiscriminately being targeted and killed, of houses of worship turned from places of sanctuary into mass graves. He displayed graphic photos, including one blown up to poster size, of a pile of bodies from the recent massacre in Bentiu. Wolf, the chairman of the House International Relations Committee, called on President Obama to act now.
President Obama, you must not allow this to continue. Call on your predecessors to immediately engage in a crisis before more innocent blood is shed. President Obama, failure to act will be a stain on your administration and a blot on your conscience.
Wolf was joined at the podium by fellow Republican Chris Smith of New Jersey, chairman of the House Congressional Panel that oversees global human rights. He says Mr. Obama should be working hard to solve the crisis, and yet he's seen nothing to indicate that's happening. He agrees with Wolf that sending Presidents Clinton and Bush to South Sudan is a great idea.
The cowboy hat that Salva Kiir wears all the time, practically, was given to him by President Bush. There's a bond there. Well, deploy him. He'll go.
But not everyone believes sending two elder U.S. statesmen will end the violence. Magdi El-Ghazouli is a longtime South Sudan analyst and research associate at the University of Freiburg, Germany. El-Ghazouli says trying to get Mr. Kiir and Bashar to reconcile should not be the objective. He says whether it's the former presidents, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who is on his way to South Sudan, or anyone else who tries to intervene, the primary message should be that they cannot come out winners of this endgame. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
A prominent member of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan has expressed confidence that the group will come up with recommendations to resolve the crisis in South Sudan following meetings with President Salva Kiir and former Vice President Riek Machar. The AU has mandated the commission to come up with a plan that would ensure justice and accountability as well as reconciliation. Justice Sophia Akufo, who is also president of the African Court on Human and People's Rights, tells reporter Peter Clotty that the group wants to first determine the underlying causes of the conflict.
We've already done one exploratory visit to South Sudan so we can observe firsthand what the situation is. We met with the president and even with the former vice president of South Sudan. We also sounded out civil society, church groups, just to get a feel of the place and then to begin to understand the underlying causes of all this, because situations like this don't arise just by themselves. There's always causation. And so that's what we went to do. But our mandate really is to investigate and come up with solutions that will assure justice, will also assure accountability in all respects of that word, including even reconciliation and so on and so forth.
There are some people in Africa and the international community who have expressed concern that the African Union appeared to have been a little too slow to help with resolving this problem, especially when it has been backing the IGAD-mediated talks between the two warring factions. What is the Commission's stance when you hear criticisms of such nature?
The African Union has been, that I'm aware of, they've been fervently been supporting the work of IGAD. And it is just unfortunate that sometimes when you're seeking peace through mediation, sometimes people things might blow up. But even those talks are still going on, even whilst we've been here in Addis. And as part of the work, we will also have some interactions, at least with the Secretariat of the IGAD and some of the member states as well.
When you met both the president and the former vice president, Riek Machar, the two warring factions, what was the interaction like? What are the prospects of peace? And did you get a sense of what is really going on, the fundamental root cause of this problem that will enable the commission to come up with recommendations about how to resolve this conflict?
I cannot go into much details about what we discussed, but certainly both expressed themselves willing to cooperate with the commission and also were willing to give us their side of what the root causes of the problem as they see it. I cannot really give you the details of those, not yet, because we haven't even reported yet to those who appointed us.
Justice Sophia Akufo is a leading member of the African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 1st. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. It has been a little more than 2 weeks since gunmen raided a school in northeastern Nigeria and kidnapped more than 200 teenage girls from their dormitories. Authorities aren't talking as impatience mounts. Several hundred people, mostly women, marched in Abuja on Wednesday to demand answers and concrete and visible action from their federal government. Viewers Anne Luke was there and has this report.
Several hundred Nigerians, most of them women, dressed in red, marched to the National Assembly with a message for the federal government. An organizer of the march and former government minister, Obi Ezekwesili.
We note that efforts may be going on, but what the women have come out today to say is that we want swift effort that has results. And the only result that we know is a swift search and rescue operation.
As many as 230 of the schoolgirls kidnapped from Chibok on April 14th are still missing. Chibok is about 1,200 kilometers northeast of the capital. Still, a few relatives of the abducted girls came for the rally. A family member of one of the girls broke down. Bring them back. Bring them back, she sobbed. The women crowded around her in support, and Zekwa Sili put an arm around her shoulders.
What are we saying to her sister? We're saying to her, we will stand with you. We will stand with you.
Thunder and heavy rain did not stop the marchers, who sang as they moved down the street. The federal government and the military have been silent in the past week on what, if anything, is being done to find the girls. An information blackout that, while not unusual here, has led many to characterize the government's response as, quote, lackadaisical. No one has claimed responsibility for the kidnapping. It is being blamed on the militant Islamist sect Boko Haram, whose five-year insurgency has killed thousands. The sect has been known to kidnap young women for use as servants and spies. The local press is reporting that some of the girls kidnapped from Chibok have already been sold as, quote, wives to combatants. Community leaders in Chibok say they believe some of the girls have been moved across the border into Cameroon and Chad. Anne Luck, VOA News, Abuja.
Liberia set up a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in 2005 to look at the root causes of its 14-year civil war that ended in 2003. After nearly 2 years of investigation, the TRC came up with its recommendations in 2009. Since then, the government has done very little to implement those recommendations, despite the fact that President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf had assured Liberians that she would do so. Now, a new organization, Survivors Truths, wants to use social media to give Liberians a chance to tell their wartime stories and hopefully heal and reconcile. Dove Presnell, Executive Director of Survivors Truth, tells me her project aims at using new technology to support traditional ways of solving problems.
Our project is called Pahlava Net because I think everyone will be familiar with the idea of the Pahlava Hut as a place to come and to discuss issues and resolve problems. One model that we're working on for Liberia is how we can use SMS technology because more and more people are able to send text messages now than ever before. If people can contribute their stories to the web, using text messages. Other people around the world can be interacting with those stories. And then the radio, good old radio, can take the responses back out to the people in outlying areas. The idea being that it's very challenging to get everyone together to really discuss what we should do now because people have been scattered by the war.
How is your project different from what the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Liberia has already tried?
Well, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission had a very specific job to do, and that was to really develop a full account of what, as we would say in Liberia, all the bad, bad things have been happening. And yet, I was there for almost 2.5 years working with people who had survived, and what I was hearing about was all of the other things that were happening during the war.
So has this type of project been tried somewhere before, or this is the first time?
This is a very different initiative than what has been done in some other places.
What types of tools would people need, or would you need, for this project to take off?
This is a new initiative, and it's quite innovative in bringing together different kinds of technology. So we're actively seeking to partner with the cell phone providers, for example, because from a technical side, in order for people to be able to share their stories using their cell phones, we have to be having our systems match up with the local cell phone providers' technology. So this is really looking at the technical tools of computer programming and cell phone technology, which I personally don't know anything about, but I know it can be done.
What about funding? Are you seeking funding, or where do you hope to get the funding?
The kind of resources that are needed for something like this are so much less than some other kinds of approaches. So we've got a two-pronged approach. We are looking for funding from your traditional sources. The local team is in the process of preparing a grant proposal for OSIWA. So, you know, those kind of more traditional donor-based funding sources are going to be important, especially initially, to get it off the ground. But one thing that we're really looking at is, how do we frame peace as a resource for a country? How do we frame reconciliation and community health as a resource? And there's some really interesting work going on at Stanford Peace Innovation Lab that we've connected up with a bit. They're looking at peace as an investment for businesses, and where the perception of instability or actual instability would have very high cost to that business.
Duff Presnell is Executive Director of Survivors Truths. She was speaking with me from our VOA Washington studio. The United States says a growing number of Al-Qaeda affiliates and other terrorist groups in the Middle East and Africa pose a serious threat to U.S. interests and allies. As VOA's Kent Klein reports, the warning comes as part of the State Department's annual report on global terrorism.
Last September's deadly attack on a Nairobi shopping mall is an indication, according to the State Department, that Al-Qaeda's central leadership is weakening as affiliated or like-minded terrorist groups gain strength. In this case, Al-Shabaab, the Somali group that claimed responsibility for the attack. The State Department's 2013 terrorism report says top leaders, such as Ayman al-Zawahiri, are losing their grip on many Al-Qaeda affiliates. And those affiliates are becoming more aggressive, according to the State Department's Coordinator for Counterterrorism, Tina Cadenow.
The evidence that we've seen has shown that they are unable to do what they had done in the past in terms of directing the activity of their affiliates globally. So I think that, you know, through any measure, what that means is degrading and disrupting has been successful. But that said, there's still a core Al-Qaeda element that we need to watch out for.
The reports focus largely on the threat in the Middle East and Africa, including groups such as Al-Shabaab and Boko Haram in Nigeria.
The past several years have seen the emergence of a more aggressive set of AQ affiliates and like-minded groups, most notably in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Northwest Africa, and Somalia.
The ongoing conflict in Syria is a key area of long-term concern, says Cadenow, because the violence there is attracting extremists from other parts of the world.
To the extent that Syria continues to become a political issue and the political conflict continues in Syria, it will attract individuals who then may be radicalized when they go to Syria and then at some point potentially return home. They could come here as well. I mean, that's certainly a possibility.
The State Department says Iran continued to be a major state sponsor of terrorism last year. The report accuses Tehran of backing Hezbollah, increasing its presence in Africa, and smuggling arms to Syria, Yemen, and Bahrain. Kent Klein, VOA News, Washington.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with sailing. Algerian windsurfer Amin Goudmine has qualified for the sailing contest at the World Youth Games in Nanjing, China, in August. The Algeria Sailing Federation head, Mohamed Atbi, told the Algiers media on Wednesday. Goudmine attained this rare achievement when he clinched a silver medal in the Bite C11 category at the recent World Sailing Championships in Riva del Garda in northern Italy. Turning to athletics, South Africa's World Student Games half marathon champion Gladwin Mzazi has his sights set on the full marathon at the 2016 Rio de Janeiro Olympics. His confidence soared after he retained his half marathon title at the recent University Sports South Africa Athletics Championships in Tshwane. What's more, Mzazi improved his championship record by almost 2 minutes. He shares his experience.
It was nice. It started early in the morning. I always train in the morning, so the weather was just perfect. A bit chilly, but we enjoyed at the end. I won the race. We really enjoyed even running with other athletes. It was very nice, yeah.
You've made your mark on the half marathon stage. First, the World University Students Championship. You were there in Prague half marathon, where you made you equaled your personal best, 61:55 seconds. And now this. So on the road, you've done it. What is your plan? What are you thinking of?
For now, I'll just go back to training, do some winter season. Then the main plan is to build towards a marathon later this year. Now in the marathon, if I can run anything under sub 2:10, I'll be very glad. Because so far, at least, my pace in the half marathon, I'm happy with it. So I'm hoping with my 61, it can help me to run sub 2:10 in the marathon, because the main plan is to run a marathon in the 2016 Olympics.
That was Gladwin Mzazi, the World Student Games half marathon champion, speaking in Tshwane, South Africa. Finally, in handball, African champions Angola have been drawn in Group B with Argentina, Denmark, Germany, Netherlands and Serbia for the World Junior Women's Handball Championships. Following the draws in Koprivnica in Croatia, the Democratic Republic of Congo are in Group C with France, Hungary, Japan, Portugal and defending champions Sweden. Tunisia is in Group D with Brazil, China, Slovenia, Romania and Russia. The competition takes place next month. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Africa for talks aimed at halting violence in South Sudan and the Central African Republic. Viewer Scott Stearns, who is traveling with the secretary, says Kerry arrived late Wednesday in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. On Thursday today, Kerry meets with the foreign ministers of Ethiopia, Uganda, and Kenya to discuss the South Sudan conflict. A senior State Department official has said the secretary will deliver tough messages for both the South Sudanese government and rebels. And Sudanese and Libyan soldiers have rescued more than 300 migrants abandoned by human smugglers in the desert near the Shire border. A Sudanese military spokesman said at least 9 of the migrants were dead and the survivors were hungry and thirsty. That's it for this Thursday, May 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, Africa, have a very good day. Stay tuned for International Edition next on The Voice of America.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.